Of Maseches Yuma, and we haven't even gotten to the first Mishnah yet. We're just giving a lot of background that's necessary to understand the Perek. So we spoke the last couple of weeks about some of the Chameshas Inuyim, some of the five prohibitions, the five restrictions that we have on Yom Kippur. And one of those is the prohibition of Achila. Now the Mishnah in the second half of the Mishnah is going to discuss what size do we say is the prohibition on Achila. How much do you have to eat in order to violate the Avera of Achila on Yom HaKippurim? And that's a discussion that's going to linger on for another couple of dafim, because it's a very famous sugya about Chatzi Shir, and how do we understand that? Now, by way of introduction to all of that, I think it's important just to have a general overview about Shiurim, about measurements in general. Where do these measurements come from? You learn through Shas, you learn through many different sugyas, and you find that the Torah tells us you have to eat a kazayis of this, a kabetza of that, a kakosevis of this, and this is the shear is an amma, and this is an agudel, a pinky, a finger, a thumb, a leg, an arm. And where does all this come from? What is it all about? And I think that's a very important introduction just to fully appreciate and understand the sugyas that we are about to learn together. So we first have a Gemara Maseches Sukkah. The same Gemara is found also in the beginning of Maseches Erevin, where the Gemara tells us, shiurin, chatzitzin, umachitzin. Whenever we talk about any measurement, either to perform a mitzvah saseh, like achilas matzah, you have to eat a certain size, or a lo saseh, like eating on Yom Kippur, or any shear for anything, an amma, a tefach, an agudel, that's one category. Or chatzitzin, when we talk about a chatzitza for going to the mikvah, what is going to be a problem, or what perhaps might not. Umachitzin, when we talk about erevin, all of those are halacha lemoshe misinai. All of those are bona fide halachos, and they are based on a halacha lemoshe misinai. Now, once in a while in the Gemara, you'll see the Gemara will say, we learn out from this pasuk that the shear is X, Y, or Z. Says the Gemara, hilchosoninu v'asmechinu rabbinu nakra. We don't really assume that it could be pinned back to a real, actual pasuk in the Torah. That's just an asmachta, because after all, it's just a halacha lemoshe misinai. We don't assume that this is anywhere that could be traced back to the Torah itself. But the problem with that is, we have a Gemara Maseches Yuma Daf Pei, where the Gemara tells us a very strange comment. So the Gemara says, ha'ochel chelev bizman hazeh. We know there's a biblical prohibition for a person to eat chelev. You're not allowed to eat certain meats. And we assume that a person who's going to eat that has to bring a karbon, because they have violated a lo saseh in the Torah. Says the Gemara, what if you're living today where there is no opportunity to bring a karbon? So what do you do? Says the Gemara, ha'ochel chelev bizman hazeh. If a person eats chelev bizman hazeh b'shogeg, tzarech sheyichtov lo shiur. You have to write down what size you ate of the piece of chalev. So if you eat a whole steak, obviously you violated the Aveira. But let's say we're talking, you ate a little bit, and then you catch yourself, you realize, oh, I wasn't really allowed to eat that. Says the Gemara, you have to make sure to write down not just the fact that you violated an Aveira, but you have to write down also how much you consumed, how much you ate. Why? Shema yavo bezdin acher, because maybe in a future, in a later generation, a bezdin will come, the yarbe b'shiurim, and they will reevaluate how big the size of a kezias or a kebetza is, and therefore they're going to tell you that the size that you ended up eating at that period in time, a long time ago, was not really something that would warrant a karbon being brought from it, because in our opinion, we don't think you ate the size of a kezias. So that's what the Gemara says. So don't you see from there that it would seem that the shiurim, that the measurements that we follow are only midrabanan? Because if not, how can the Gemara say? You have to write down exactly how much you ate, because maybe a basin is going to come later on and reevaluate the shear. What does it mean they're going to reevaluate the shear? How do they have a right to? Can a basin come later on and start reevaluating the lamites avas malachas and say, well, we think kosev shouldn't apply, and we think maybe bishul shouldn't apply? It would make life very easy, but we don't have such a thing. So how does the Bezdin, the same way they don't have a right to reevaluate the lamites avas malachos and make them more limited than they were, so too they don't have a right to change any of the shiurim that the Torah gave us either. So what does this Gemara mean? Doesn't that seem to be an indication that maybe we're dealing with something which is only midrabanan? And that's where we have some difficulty. The Gemara says even more explicitly, Gemara in Chagiga, Gemara in other places, where the Gemara says, shiuru chachamim b'ka dasha. Sometimes when we're dealing with tuma, so the Gemara says, shiuru chachamim, the chachamim gave it a certain measurement of kadasha, the size of a barley, or the size of a finger, the size of... What do you mean the chachamim gave the measurement? It's not up to the chachamim, it's halacha lemoshe misinai. So what does this mean? How do we understand this Gemara? And if in fact it's halacha lemoshe misinai, what does the Gemara mean here when it seems to tell us an indication that it is also in some way a din derabbanan? So many Achronim give the answer that perhaps what it means is that the general concept of Shiurim was a halacha l'Moshe Misinai. All the measurements were halacha l'Moshe Misinai, which means that, let's say, the halacha l'Moshe Misinai was that whenever you have a measurement, it has to be used by a kazayis, a kebetza, a kakoseves, an ama, a tefach, a regel, an agudel, everything, all these different things, a finger, a thumb, a toe, a pinky, all those things were the measurements that were given as the halacha l'Moshe Misinai. Where we applied which measurement to what, that was left up to the Chachamim. So the Chachamim said, if you have to eat something, it's the size of a kezayis. Maybe later on in a future generation, the Chachamim are going to come along and say, we made a mistake. And really, we were supposed to apply something else. It was the size of a barley, not the size of an olive. Maybe it was the size of an egg, and it wasn't the size of a foot. So maybe something like that is going to change the application of each and every individual measurement, and where we use it and where perhaps we don't. That's what the Achronim explain, is what it means, that it's in some way a din derabanan. But bigadol, generally we assume that all the measurements that we have are a bona fide halacha l'Moshe Misinai. And in fact, we have in the Tosefta, the Rambam quotes this Tosefta in Meseches Mikvos, where the Tosefta says, kezayis min hanaveli, you look at number beis. If you have a piece of, a person eats a kezayis from an animal that wasn't shechted properly, or ka'adasha min hasheretz, a person has a certain measurement of a dead sheretz, which is going to be metameyu. And a person is safeg yesh behem kashir safeg yesh behem. You don't know exactly, is this really the right size or not? Did I really eat the right size to make myself chayiv? Or maybe I didn't touch the right amount of sheretz in order to make myself tamei? Says the Gemara, sveko tamei. We assume that misafeg, whenever a person's in doubt about the shiurim, we assume you have to be machmir. The safeg is going to be tamei. Shakal davar she'ikar min ha-Torah, says the Tosefta, because any time you have something which is ikaro min ha-Torah, for example, the Isra of Nevela, or the Isra of Tumas Sheretz, or anything of that nature, it's ikaro min ha-Torah. Torah says you're not allowed to be metame to that, but the Torah doesn't say what exactly the measurement is to be metame you. Says the Gemara that any case like that is sveiko tame, which would seem also to be an indication that what we're dealing with here is something which is a din d'oraisa. It's halacha l'Moshe Misinai, because otherwise why would a suffix under these kinds of conditions be tamei? Why would we be machmer? We would say, like every other suffix, d'rabbanan l'kula. So the Rambam points out that it would seem from here that shiurim really have the status of halacha l'Moshe Misinai, like the Gemara clearly states in Masechta Sukkah, and therefore we assume that whenever you have a doubt, whenever you have a suffix about something which is shiur related, which is measurement related, we assume sveiko l'hachmer. So now let's move a little further. When the Chazal set up the various measurements, the various shiurim, they generally used, like we mentioned, plants or fruits or vegetables or fingers, arms, legs, toes, knees, something like that. That's what we generally find Chazal using. So we have a kezayis, a kebetza, a kakoseves, an etzba, a tefach, an ama, a nagudel. And the Gaonim were wondering, the Gaonim was a period very early by the time of the Rishonim, so the Gaonim were wondering, why is that the case? The Gaonim was before the Rishonim. Why was it that all the measurements were set up in such mundane terms? Why do they do it that way? Why do they tell us that you have to eat the size of a kezayis or the size of a kebetza or the size of a kakos? So arbitrary. Why do they use such natural means in order to give us the sizes? Now, number one, the reason why is because they didn't have any precise mechanism of measuring things back then. There was no ruler, and there was nothing that can have any more precision than to say an olive or an egg or a finger or a toe. That's just the simple reason why. But the Gaonim say it goes a little bit further than that. So let's read together what the Gaonim write. The Shari Tshuva, there are two different Shari Tshuvas. The Shari Tshuva is printed on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, which is a commentary on Shulchan Aruch. But then we also have a very early Sefer called the Shari Tshuva, which is the Tshuvas that were written by the Gaonim. And that's a very important piece of halacha, because very often you see how the halacha was developed from the way the Gaonim explained it. They were so early on in the halachic process, it's important to look at how they understood it. So the Gaonim, this was a letter written to Rav Haigon. They were trying to figure out, where did Chazal come up with all these measurements? Why do they tell us that it's a mundane measurement, like a barley, like an egg, like a kakoseva, like a date, like a fig? Where does that come from? So the Gaonim write as follows. V'fisha habeitzim v'haperos. Because when you give measurements in the size of a beitza, and the size of an egg, or the size of a fruit, nimtzayim b'chol makom, eggs are available universally. Eggs are of eternal nature, so it makes sense. If the Chachamim would have given us a measurement that only made sense in their generation, How would we know how to extrapolate from that to our generation? We're not using the same metric system. How are we supposed to know what they had in mind? Therefore, they simplified it and they said, the way to know what the shear is, what the measurement is by determining the size of an egg, the size of an olive, the size of a date, the size of a finger, and all these different things. Say the Gaonim, because it was clear that the Jewish people would be dispersed all around the world. And all of the measurements that were applicable in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu and further on, how are we going to translate those measurements into the countries where we happen to live when there's a different system of measuring? There are many different ways of measuring different things. And therefore, lakach talu chachamim hashir bebeitzim uveperis, and that's why the chachamim gave us very mundane ways of figuring this out. And they said, a person's finger is always going to be a person's finger. A person's toe is always going to be a toe. And an egg is always going to be an egg, and an olive is always an olive. And that's the way you know that you're going to have a universal and eternal system of the proper measurements for all the various mitzvos and averis in the Torah. Shehem kayamim b'chaleis ve'ein mishtanim. So, that sounds like a very simple explanation, and it makes a lot of sense. What? So that's what we're getting to. We're getting to the Rebbe Yehuda, but let's first build up to that. Now, although this sounds like a very convincing argument that the Gaonim are given, that it made a lot of sense why we were given the measurements and the sizes that we were, because after all, we wanted that everyone, wherever they live all over the world, should have the ability to tap into the measurements and understand what they are. However, there was a major sense of uncertainty in future generations with regard to our understanding and our interpretation of the measurements, regardless of the fact that they were given originally for us to understand carefully. There was a lot of controversy revolving around that, and that goes in many different directions. Rav Moshe and so many others discuss, let's say, the malacha of Bishul b'Shabbos. Right? So you violate the Isser of Bishul if you have something that cooks up to a degree of Yad Soledes, which means when your hand is going to get burnt in it, when your hand is Yad Nichvas Bo, when your hand is going to get really burnt, you're going to get a bruise on it, whatever it might mean. Now, what degree is that? So how can you have a discrepancy of what degree it is? Why don't we test it out, put somebody's hand in? It's not a good idea, but how do we not know what that is? And yet we know that it's not really clear. The Achronim are not really sure what that degree really is. What is that temperature when we assume you have violated the laws of Shabbos? Is it 109? Is it 113? Maybe it's higher, maybe it's lower. We're not really sure what that measurement is. Not only was there a discrepancy with regard to Yad Soledes, which again, maybe degrees of cooking on Shabbos is a little more difficult to have precision on. However, it got even more complicated because there was a major debate about whether the size of the eggs are the same or the size of the olives are the same. Is everything really the same as it was back then? Now, there are a number of different approaches to understand how we approach this. So number one, we have the approach of the stipler. The stipler has a sefer called Shiurin Shel Torah, which is all about how to figure out how to configure the measurements and our understanding today. And there the stipler writes, his approach is that the Chachamim were the ones who developed all of the measurements. They decided what it was going to be based on their understanding at their time. And therefore he says, even if you feel that the eggs may have grown or the eggs may have shrunk, it doesn't make a difference. Whatever they said back then is what it's going to be. And we're not going to change it in future generations based on the science of today or based on the understanding of our metric system of today. And he quotes a proof to this from the Rambam in Hilchos Shechita. So the Rambam writes as follows. Look at number Dalet. Says the Rambam, Kol Elu Shemanu. In Hilchos Shechita we have, not only do you have an obligation of shechting an animal, but one must be careful after shechting the animal to make sure that there are no trefos, that there are no punctures in the lung which would invalidate this animal, which would make it non-kosher. Now, the Gemara has a principle where we're told, trefa ein achaya. If you have an animal that has a puncture that we consider to be a trefa, there's no way that it would live out the year. Trefa ein achaya beis chodesh, it's impossible that a trefa would live 12 months, because with this kind of injury, there's no way it can live that long. Now, nowadays we don't know exactly how to define what the Gemara's concerns of trefas actually were. So I have a very good way of defining it. If you see an animal has this problem, let it stick around for another 12 months, and then we'll know with certainty whether or not that is considered to be a trefa, or perhaps not. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Says the Rambam, no. Says the Rambam as follows. Kal elu shamanu. All of these various illnesses in animals that the Gemara quotes as saying that this is considered a trefa and now is disqualified. Alfal pi sheyira bedarkei harefua. Even though the science of today tells us shebiyameinu shemiktsasan einam mamisim, that some of these things that we consider the animal to be a trefa for are not really fatal. The animal's not going to die from that. The animal is able to live another 12 months. Ve'evsher shetichya mehem, ein lecha ela ma shemanu chachamim. We don't change the status of what a trefa is and what a trefa is not. And even though science has developed tenfold, twentyfold, a hundredfold since the times of Chazal, doesn't make a difference. Says the Rambam, whatever they decided was considered to be a trefa based on the science of their time is the way that it remained, and nothing's going to change with regard to that. That's the opinion of the Rambam with regard to trefa, and from here, says the Stipler, that should be the same with regard to all of our measurements, all of our shiurim. The metric system in our times has changed from the times of Chazal, and yes, maybe the eggs are bigger or smaller, and maybe the olives are bigger or smaller, and maybe the fingers and toes are bigger or smaller, doesn't make a difference. The same way the Rambam said by Hilchas Trefos, that whatever it was is what it's going to remain, even though the science is makhish, even though the science says that certainly is not the case today, that's not our understanding today, yet whatever the Chazal said, that's what it is. So to hear, the Stipler extrapolates from there that we assume all measurements remain the same as well. But this was not the generally accepted opinion at all. The Noda Yehuda very famously took issue with that. Now the Noda Yehuda was way before the Stipler. Noda Yehuda lived in the middle of the 1700s. He was a tremendous personality, the Rav in Prague. And the Noda Yehuda took major issue with the Shiurim. And the Noda Yehuda decided to do an experiment. And he was going to measure, based on all the collected evidence that we find in the Gemaras and in Chazal, what is the size of a kibetza? What is the size of an olive? Is this really true? Is it really correct that is this many thumbs and this many fingers equals a kibetza? Let's measure it out and let's figure out whether or not this is correct. The Noda Yehuda said the whole thing is a mistake and everything is off and we have to change it. And we have to change our understanding of the measurements from what they were back then. That was the argument of the Noda Yehuda. Because he said that there was a major discrepancy. He said it just doesn't add up. The math today doesn't add up to the measurements that we see in Chazal. Now, this opinion of the Noda Yehuda was accepted by many of the Gedolim of his time and future. So let's say Rabbi Kiva Eger writes that he accepted the opinion of the Noda Yehuda. The Chasam Sofer, who lived at that generation as well, the Vilna Gaon, who lived 20 years before them, also felt the same thing. And many other great Gedolim accepted the opinion of the Noda Yehuda that the measurements need to change because, after all, it just doesn't add up based on the science of today, based on the way our bodies are growing today. Something is very different. Now, here's a very fascinating piece of history because Rabbi Yehuda has a Talmud. We spoke about him in the past, the Tshuva Me'ava. Tshuva Me'ava was Rabbi Elazar Fleklish, and we quoted a few things from him in the past, where he takes issue with his Rebbe, the Rabbi Yehuda. Now, how can he take issue with him? What did he do wrong? All he did was, he took all the formulas in Chazal, and he measured it, and he came to the conclusion that it was wrong. So he said, obviously something changed. Nishtanu hatvayim. Nature obviously developed, and things evolved, and things became bigger and smaller, and therefore we have to change our opinion. So the Tshuva Me'ava doesn't like what his Rebbe said. How can he not like it? What's wrong with what he said? So look what he writes. So he writes in his Tshuva as follows, the bottom of the page. Yes, he says, I know my Rebbe made an experiment, and the Noda Yehuda decided that everything has to change. Aval, however, Chalila v'chalila lahakil ba'avur cheshbon hazeh b'shir achila b'yom ha'kipurim shehi v'kabetza. If you follow the logic of my Rebbe, the Noda Yehuda, that means that everything has changed. That means, if you want to eat on Yom Kippur, it's not going to be the same as what the Gemara says you're going to be punished for eating on Yom Kippur. Right? If the Noda Yehuda says that everything's bigger today than it was, that means what I originally thought was not allowed to be consumed on Yom Kippur is now allowed to be consumed on Yom Kippur, because I'm eating less than the real shear. Now says the Tshuva Me'ava, don't take my Rebbe's opinion that far. You don't have a right to be makel based on his opinion. Ki mori v'rabi hago Noda Yehuda, because my Rebbe, the Noda Yehuda, when he made his calculation, lo ba lahakel al shel Torah, he didn't come to say lahakel, that now you're allowed to eat on Yom Kippur more than you thought you were allowed to, ela lahachmir. All he said was in the other direction, that on Lel Pesach, when you're trying to figure out how much matzah do you need to eat, it's not good enough to eat what you thought was a kazayis, you need to eat much more than that. But he never meant to say it in the other direction, that on Yom Kippur you can be mekel and eat more than you otherwise would have thought. Ula niyaz daiti. And he says, I beg your pardon, but I think my Rebbe, the Noti Behuda, was mistaken. His whole calculation was off. Cheshiv lefi agudel shalo. Why was he wrong? Because he did the calculation based on his own fingers. And he says, v'hu haya arech bedoro. He was a giant. Mishichma v'mala gavol me'al kol gavoyim. My Rebbe, the Noti Behuda, was a god of the Torah. He was a god of Israel. He was a great person. Not only was he a great Talmud Chacham, he was also a very large person. And he had bigger hands and fingers than everybody else. V'agudlo haya kafel mishal b'nei adam b'enoni. His thumb was twice the size of anybody else. So of course, as Shiurim said, of course when he made the experiment, he came out that everything was wrong because you were measuring with your fingers that weren't the same size as everybody else's. Kenoda lakal mishaya zochel akiro. Anybody who met the Noti Behuda knows that what I'm saying is true, he says. Uba agudlo hayaroyo lachshov shir kesem. How do I know this is true? He says, with my Rebbe's thumb, he was able to measure the size of a kesem for Hilchos Nida. So that means he had something that was very different than everybody else's. Ukidvarim Eila Amarti Lamariv Rabbi. He says, after my Rebbe came out with his chiddush, with his thesis that everything is wrong and that the shiurim have to be reevaluated, I went and I discussed the issue with him and I said, hey, I beg your pardon, but by the way, I think this is not really fair because you are much bigger than everybody else. And he records that the Noti Behuda hayam enanea berosho. The Noti Behuda was shaking his head. V'sachak, and he left. Aha. So what does that mean? So it's like a very brisker inyan here. Because here, a major machlokas broke out. Well, what does it mean that the Noti Behuda left? Now, as the son of a person who people always ask shilas to, some of the people who ask my father questions ask very good questions. Some of the people who ask him questions ask very silly questions. But he's very respectful, and he gives time for everybody. But you have to understand the answers that he gives. Sometimes the answer is, you know, he shakes his head, and that means you're being annoying, and I don't want to answer you, because I don't know what to say. And sometimes he shakes his head the other way, which means it's a good question, I have to think about it. So you have to understand the person that you're dealing with. And that's what the machlokes broke out. What did the Noti Behuda mean when he laughed at his Talmud who said this vart? His Talmud comes to him and says, oh, Noti Behuda, you're an Adam Gadol. And that's why all the measurements were off, because your hands, your fingers are greater than everybody else's. So the Noti Behuda laughed at him. Does that mean you're a meshugana and you're very annoying, so get away from me and stop bothering me? Or does it mean, oh, you have a good point. You have a good point. And he was laughing because, oh, you know, you pointed out something to me that I didn't realize. So you had to know the Noti Behuda to figure it out. So here, historically, broke out a major disagreement about how do we interpret the laugh of the Noti Behuda, which I think is a fascinating point. So you look at the top of the second side of the page, the Mari Asad, who lived not so far after that. He was in the early 1800s. Mari Asad writes that he heard that the Tshuva Me'ava said that he discussed this with his Rebbe, the Noti Behuda. And the Noti Behuda laughed when he pushed back a little bit. Now, what does it mean? So he writes as follows. Hagon b'tshuva me'ava hisig al-rabba ha-Noti Behuda b'zeh. I know that Rabbi Elazar Fleklish took issue with Rabbi Cheska Landa, the Noti Behuda, about this calculation. V'isvakeach imo b'fanav, and he disagreed with him. He pushed back about it. Ad asher nanea lo rosho v'sachak. After all, he shook his head and he laughed at him. And Nira, my interpretation of that is, kehodalo. It seems that Noti Behuda agreed, and the Noti Behuda felt that maybe he was mistaken. And let's leave everything the way it was. Okay, that's one interpretation. Comes the Chazon Ish 200 years later, and he says, you're all wrong. You don't know what the Noti Behuda's laugh meant. Says the Chazon Ish, it's ridiculous to think that the Noti Behuda didn't know that he was bigger than everyone else. You think he didn't know how to make an experiment? Of course he knew that he was bigger than everybody else. So look what he says. And the Chazon Ish, it's so unusual how the Chazon Ish talks here. Chazon Ish goes, he talks so negatively about the Tshuva Me'ava, and he just says, you're making such a fool out of the Noti Behuda. How do you say such a thing about him? You think he was such an idiot? You think the Noti Behuda didn't understand when he was making an experiment that he couldn't figure out how to do it the right way? He was that foolish? Says the Chazon Ish, this that the Tshuva Me'ava argued that, oh, the Noti Behuda was bigger than everybody else, and therefore he didn't have an accurate assessment of how to do the measurements properly. And the Tshuva Me'ava even writes the story that he fought back with his Rebbe, and the Rebbe laughed at him. It's nonsense, says the Chazon Ish. Why? Why? Don't even quote this in the Beis Medrash. Because it's such a silly story. Do you think the Noda Behuda didn't know that when you're doing an experiment, you have to make sure it's a controlled experiment? You think he didn't know that? You think he didn't know that he was bigger than everybody else? And therefore, when he's going to try it out, it's not going to work out? Says the Chazon Ish, he's imagining what must have happened. Now, the Behuda gets up one day in his Beis Medrash and he says, look, I have major questions about what's the size of all the Shiurei Torah. I don't know what's going on. I don't know how busy is Zayas, Kebetza, what is it really supposed to be? So he says, you know, we're going to do an experiment. He tells his Talmudim, I'm ready for the experiment. The problem is, I can't do the experiment on my own because my fingers aren't the right size. Do we have a volunteer? So he calls somebody else up. Says the Chazon Ish, either he says, even though the Noda Behuda was 7 feet tall, but still, maybe his thumbs were the same size as everybody else. Or, the Tshuva Me'aba doesn't say that he was there that day when the Noda Behuda did the experiment. If he was there at the time when the Noda Behuda was doing the experiment, he would have yelled at him right away. He would have said, what are you talking about? So Elamai, it must be, he wasn't there that day. And he only heard about it later. So you missed the whole experiment. You weren't there to see what happened. Do you think the Noda Behuda didn't think about your point? Umina yada, how does he know? That the Noda Behuda didn't call up one of the Talmidim who had a regular sized thumb and do the experiment with him? Vim ha'aras ha'tshuva me'aba ha'isa kol kach chashuva. If you really want to accept, says the Chazon Ish, that the tshuva me'aba is correct, and in fact, he upslugged his Rebbe, and the Rebbe agreed to him. Even though, says the Chazon Ish, I don't understand what exactly he enlightened him about. It's obvious. And you want to really agree to say that the Noda Behuda took back his opinion. Isn't this a very important inyan? Isn't this a very important topic? It has pretty important consequences. After all, depends whether you're going to be chayv kares for eating on Yom Kippur. It depends whether you've been mekayim the mitzvah of matzah on Leil Pesach. It depends everything. It depends whether a kohen was metame to something he wasn't allowed to be metame to. It has a lot of ramifications. So if it's that important, sharei kava b'sifro hara l'chol Yisrael v'nishchadish lo shehu ta'usa, would the Noda Behuda not have been responsible enough to write a tshuva in a sefer and say, this that I first had thought was a mistake, and I take it all back, and nobody should rely on what I said? Do you think he wouldn't have done that? For an issue that's this important? Would he not have hung up Pashkevilim all over Prague to make sure that everybody was aware that he retracted from his opinion? Of course he would have. Of course he would have. V'chikach hi hamida ligmar hadavar b'schok kal. You think that's the way the story would have ended? That he just laughed at his Talmud and that's the way that he wanted his opinion to go down in history? Is that good enough? That's not responsible. We're talking about the Noda Behuda. He knew who he was. You think he wouldn't have taken responsibility to write a tshuva against what he originally thought? Aval ha-Noda Behuda shama hadvarim kipitpule mili ba'alma. He says, in my opinion, what happened was, when the Tshuva Me'ava came to argue the case with his Rebbe, the Noda Behuda said, okay, a nudnik in the Beis Medrash. So he laughed and he humored him along, and then he laughed at him, and he said, okay, so we'll move on from this. And that was that. V'halo l'faneinu eidusan shal kol ha'gaonim. And he says, this can't be. It can't be that the Noda Behuda retracted his opinion. We're going to stick with what the Noda Behuda said, that the shiurim have changed, and that we have to reevaluate the size of a kebetza, and we have to reevaluate the size of a kezias, and everything has to be considered once again. We cannot simply adopt the old shiurim because it just doesn't add up. Now, this is an issue that resurfaced again in the early 1900s. Because we had, in the 1900s, a great tzaddik, a great Talmud Chacham by the name of Reb Chaim Noyeh, who once again got into this discussion, should we reevaluate all of the shiurim that Chazal told us, or should we keep everything status quo the way it was? And he was coming at it also from an issue of the mitzvah of hafrashas challah. There's only a certain amount of dough that you need, flour that needs to be added to the mixture, in order to be obligated in the mitzvah of hafrashas challah. If you make a small batter, that's too small, less than mem gimel beitzim, you're not mechuyev to be mafresh challah. Now you figure out, how much is the volume of mem gimel beitzim? Of 43 eggs. Well, it depends what size eggs you're talking about. If you're talking about Chazal's eggs, which maybe were smaller, maybe that's a lesser amount. If you're talking about larger eggs that we have today, maybe we're dealing with something that is bigger, and you're not chayv to be mafresh challah until you have a larger quantity of flour that's mixed in. So it has major consequences, it has major ramifications, not only for achilas matzah, not only when we're talking about eating on Yom Kippur, but when we're talking about other halachas as well. For example, the mitzvah of hafrashas challah. This happens to be, by the way, parenthetically, why nowadays, when we're mafresh challah, we generally say the only time that you make a bracha is when you have 5 pounds of flour, 5 or more pounds of flour. But if you make a mixture that has between 3 and 5 pounds of flour, we tell people that they should be advised to be mafresh challah without a bracha. It's based on this uncertainty. We don't know exactly how big the shear of a beitza is, and therefore we don't know exactly what the volume is to be mafresh challah. So less than 3 pounds of flour we know is for sure less than the amount. More than 5 pounds of flour we know is for sure according to all shitas yechayiv. But between 3 and 5 is where we have this major discrepancy based on the conversation that was started by the Nodi Yehuda, based on the conversation that continued in the 1900s and the 1800s and the 1700s. Everybody was talking about this for 300 years, figuring out whether or not we should reevaluate all of the Shiurei Torah, or do we assume, like the Stipler said, that everything is stagnant, everything remains in its place, and even though science has proven that everything's different, doesn't make a difference. Whatever the Chazal said it is, that's what it is. Yeah. He was arguing that we should keep the Masorah the way it was. Reb Chaim Noah argued that we should keep everything the way it was, and we shouldn't reevaluate everything. And then he was trying to say, in our colloquial terms, what exactly we would consider that measurement to be in our metric system. So his argument was, let's keep things the way they were, let's stick to the Masorah that was, and let's not change anything. The Chazon Ish, very famously, and the Chazon Ish's Talmidim went along with that as well, they said that we should be following the opinion of the Nodi Yehuda, and everything is double the size than it originally was. Everything has to be reevaluated, which means on Pesach you have to eat twice the amount that you thought you would have to eat previously. And on Yom Kippur, right, that's arguable, maybe you should say it goes lahakil. Maybe you should say that now that the shear is much bigger, so now you have the opportunity to eat without being chayv karis on Yom Kippur until you eat a larger shear. So this was a major issue that was discussed, as we said, in the 1700s at the Nodi Yehuda. A major discussion broke out exactly what the Nodi Yehuda meant to say. Maybe he retracted from his original opinion. Later on, it came up again in the 1900s when they discussed, should we accept the opinion of the Nodi Yehuda and all those who came after him, or maybe we should just stick with the old measurements and not change anything from the way it was. So this was a major issue. Lamaisa, you look in the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah, even though he has many questions against the Nodi Yehuda's change from tradition, from Masorah here, the Mishnah Berurah comes to the following conclusion. Not sure why I brought it from the Sefer Shiurim Shel Torah, but the Mishnah Berurah himself writes the following. Ulamaisa, on the bottom of the page. Ulamaisa nira de la inyan da'araisa. We have the following compromise. When it comes to a mitzvah mid'araisa kagon, kezayis matzah b'lel Pesach, when a person is trying to figure out, how much matzah do I need to eat on Pesach, and matzah is a mitzvah da'araisa that we have an obligation to fulfill, bivada yesh lahachmir kedivrayim. You have to take into account that maybe the Nodi Yehuda is correct, and maybe the shiurim that we once thought were correct are not really applicable today, and everything is really double the size, and therefore the Nodi Yehuda's position has to be taken into account, and therefore you have to eat twice the amount of matzah that you thought. So I remember in my parents' house, so we always have all kinds of people come over at Pesach, and throughout the year. So my father, I remember, always said that sometimes we had people who were not able to take in so much matzah. They had some sort of medical condition. So again, if it's someone who has a real medical problem and by eating the matzah they're going to get sick, so you don't eat the matzah, what are you going to do? My father always likes to say that he had a chavrusa many years ago, Dr. Naftali Neuberger, lives in Flatbush. So he told my father that the two busiest nights in the emergency room, he was an emergency room doctor, he said the two busiest nights in the emergency room in Flatbush are the two nights of the Seder. He said he always wondered, how can that be called Zman Chereseinu? People are eating mara that they're not allowed to eat because it's detrimental to their health. They're drinking wine that's going to make them sick. They're eating matzah that's making their stomachs turn upside down. They end up in the emergency room. That's Zman Chereseinu? So if a person is sick, they're not supposed to eat all of that. But what if a person is not so sick? It's difficult for them to eat matzah, and they're limited to the amount that they're allowed to eat. How much would we say they should eat on Leil HaSeder? How much are they mechuyev to eat? So my father always said that it depends if it's the first night of Pesach or it's the second night of Pesach. If it's the first night of Pesach where we say that the achilas matzah is a mitzvah d'oraisa, then you should be machmer like the Noda B'Yehuda. Right? Then you should be machmer like the Noda B'Yehuda. If it's the second night of Pesach, which is only midirabanan, right, because Yom Tov Sheni Shogalis is only midirabanan, so if it's only the second night of Pesach and the whole achilas matzah is only midirabanan, so then we have room to be mekel, and then you should eat much less because you should go rely on the original shita. You have no reason to be machmir for this new opinion of the Noda B'Yehuda. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah says here. He says, when it comes to achilas matzah, belel Pesach, bevada yesh lahachmir kidivrayim, then we should follow the opinion of the Noda B'Yehuda that maybe we had it all wrong all along, and now we have to reevaluate, and everything is double the size, and therefore you have to eat more than you thought. The same goes for Kiddush on Leil Shabbos, when you're trying to figure out how much is a revius. You have to drink a revius, you have to have a cup of wine that holds a revius. Well, what size cup is that? Well, it depends how big a revius is. It depends how you measure it. Says the Mishnah Berurah, when we're talking about Kiddush on Friday night as opposed to Shabbos day, Kiddush on Friday night is something which is possibly midaraisa, and therefore we assume, therefore that should be done like the shear of the Noda B'Yehuda. Gam kein nachon lachosh lechatchila ledivrei atzlach. V'chein v'chasam sofer machmer gam kein le'inyin revius kidvar. So that's the compromise opinion that the Mishnah Berurah comes up with. That, because we have a tremendous amount of uncertainty with regard to all the shiurim that the Torah gives us, so he says it depends. When you're dealing with a mitzvah midaraisa, you have to err on the side of caution, safik daraisa lechumra, and therefore we have to adopt the opinion of the Noda B'Yehuda and say that maybe his calculation was correct, which means that everything is double the size that it originally was, and therefore we have to adapt all of the shiurim that we once thought were applicable. However, he says when it comes to mitzvahs midirabanan, safik dirabanan lekula, and therefore we don't have to go ahead and be machmir so far. One final point to think about before we move into the sugya next week. We're going to end with this point. And next week, hopefully, we'll start with the sugya of Chatzi Shir, which is the first Gemara after the Mishnah that we learn. So one final point to think about is the following. We have in many different places in throughout Shulchan Aruch and throughout the Gemara where we're taught about the principle of Rubo Kukulo. What does Rubo Kukulo mean? It means if you do most of something, it's considered as if you've done the whole. So for example, the Gemara says in Chulin Daf Yotes with regard to Hilchas Shechita, the Gemara says that you're really supposed to shecht both of the simanim, both of the pipes of the animal. What if you were shachat rov simanim? So the Gemara says, Hashochet rov simanim is kasher. If you do a shechita and all the shochet did was cut most of the simanim, 60% of it, so then we assume that that's considered to be kishachot dami. It's as if the entire two pipes have been slaughtered. And that's based on the principle of Rubo Kukulo. Same thing the Gemara says in Maseches Nida when it comes to Tumas Leida, when we're trying to figure out when is a baby considered to be born and when not. So the Gemara says we assume Yatza Rov Havlad, let's say most of the body has come out, and now, I don't think it can happen nowadays, but the Gemara gives us such a case conceptually that if you have most of the body exits from the mother, and now some of it goes back in, so the Gemara says that's considered like a yalud. That's considered if the child was born again because rubo kukulo. And the Rishonim add to the list and they say many different examples. For example, we know that someone is not allowed to go into Bais HaManuga, otherwise they're going to become tame. So when do I become tame? Only if I enter my whole body? So says the Gemara, no. If you stick a finger in, so that's not considered that your whole body was tame. If most of your body goes in, says the Gemara, that is called hanichnas labai. I'm sorry, the Rishonim say that is already called nichnas labayis. That's as if your entire body has entered, and now your entire body is going to become tameh. Similarly, the Rishonim say you have an isra of being makif, paazikanecha. You're not allowed to shave certain parts of the face. So the Rishonim say it doesn't mean only if you shave everything. It means if you shave rove of that area, it's also considered to be a violation of being makif, the places on the face where you're not allowed to be makif. So we have many examples of rubo kukulo. There is one exception to the rule where the Gemara says by nazir, that it says that the nazir, at the end of the days of his nazirus, he has to bring a slew of karbanos to the Beis HaMikdash, he has to go through a whole procedure of tahara, and part of that is yigal chenu, he has to shave off all of his hair. Now what does that mean, all of his hair? Do we say rubo kukulo there, as long as he shaves off most of it, it's good enough? Or do you say, no, he has to do everything? So says the Gemara in Nazir, ad shi galeach eskulo. Over here by the din, by a nazir, is he has to shave everything off. It's not good enough just to shave most of his hair. Like we say, you have to just shecht most of the simanim of the animal, or you have to walk most of your body into the bayis hamanuga. Over here, he has to shave off his entire hair from his entire body. It's not good enough to shave most of it. So that's the only exception to the rule that we find in the Gemara. But generally, we assume we have this principle of rubo kikulo. Now the problem is, if we have this idea of rubo kikulo, why do we also not extend it to, let's say, achila on Yom Kippur? Right? So let's say the Gemara tells us, when are you going to be held responsible for eating on Yom Kippur? Only when you eat a certain shear. Why don't you say rubo kikulo? Why don't you say, if I eat most of that shear, I'm also in violation of the Isser, I should also be chayiv karis. Or, what about when you have a mikveh? Right? So a woman needs to use the mikveh, or a man needs to use the mikveh. And now you're trying to figure out, is this a mikveh that's kosher or not? So why don't you say, as long as the mikveh has 21 sa instead of 40 sa, ruba kukulo, it's good enough. We know that a mikveh, in order to be kosher, has to have a certain minimal amount. Why don't you say, well, no, that just means lechatchila. But as long as you have 21 sa, that should be sufficient. Why don't we apply the principle of ruba kukulo to other areas of halacha as well? Why don't we say that? And that's an issue we're going to have to deal with, because our Gemara here gets into a whole discussion about chatzi shir. What if you eat partial shir of what you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur? Have you violated an avera of achila on Yom Kippur, or perhaps not? And how do we view that? Now the question is, it's very nice you're having a discussion about chatzi shir. Why don't you say that that's the regular principle that we have of ruba kukula? As long as you eat most of that shir, it's considered as if you ate the whole thing. What are you going to say? Our Gemara is only talking about someone who eats less than rov, less than half? Is that what it means? Chatzi shir means less than half? Or does chatzi shir even mean a minuscule? Does chatzi shir mean more? So we're going to have to figure all that out when we start the sugya next week. But this was just a general overview about shiurim, and how do we understand what shiurim are all about? So just to review, we started off that the Gemara says in Maseches Sukkah and Maseches Erevin that all shiurim that we have in the Torah are considered to be halacha l'moshe misinai. And you will never find where the pasuk says specifically that in order to violate a certain aver, you have to eat X amount, or in order to fulfill a certain mitzvah, you have to eat X amount. We don't find that, because after all, it's just a halacha l'moshe misinai, which means it's just a tradition, it's just a mesorah. Therefore, since the halacha l'moshe misinai, we also assume that anytime you have a suffek in these kinds of shiurim, sveik alahachmir, that's what the Tosefta says, that's the way the Rambam explains it, sveik alahachmir, because we're dealing with a halacha l'moshe misinai, which in many ways has the status of a din d'oraisa. Now, the Gaonim asked, where do they come up with all these arbitrary and very mundane shiurim? Why do we say that the shiurim are based on a kezayis, on a kebetza, on an agudal, on an etzba, on a finger, on a toe, on a pinky? Why couldn't they come up with something that was more scientific? So the answer number one is because they didn't have a metric system like we have today. They didn't have precision like we have today. That's answer number one. But answer number two that the Gaonim give is because they wanted to make sure that the measurements are going to be universal and eternal. And the only way to do that was by saying, we're going to do it by an egg, by an olive, which is always going to be available in any country where you might live. By a finger, by a pinky, by a toe. This way people can always figure out what the measurements are. Now the problem is, although that is true and that was the intention, the Nabi Yehuda and many others along the way had argued that maybe Nishtanu atvayim. Maybe now we're bigger. Maybe the eggs are bigger. Maybe the eggs are smaller. Maybe everything's different. And therefore we have to reevaluate and figure out whether or not the original sizes that we thought everything was are really the sizes that are applicable today in our scientific understanding of what these things actually are and what they may have been many years ago. Which caused for a whole major controversy. Do we now change everything that we always understood to be true just because the Nabi Yehuda did his experiment? Or do we assume maybe his experiment was not a controlled experiment? As we said, that was a major discussion in the 1700s, 1800s, and later on in the 1900s, once again, with the Chazon Ish and Reb Chaim Noah, trying to figure out how do we evaluate what exactly the proper measurement of the shiurim are supposed to be today. And finally, we came up that the Mishneh Berurah has the conclusion that we have the compromise opinion. When it comes to a mitzvah midaraisa, we assume that anytime you're faced with a mitzvah or an iser daraisa, you have to be machmir, like the Nabi Yehuda. Whenever we're dealing with only an iser derabanan or a mitzvah midarabanan, perhaps we have a right to be more makel, because, after all, we had the Mesorah the way it was, we had the Shiurim set up the way they were, and we don't have to go and reevaluate everything and change the way it originally was assumed to be, because, after all we're dealing with is only a mitzvah or an iser midrabbanan. So, Mirtz Hashem, next week we will continue. Everybody make sure to bring your Gemaras next week. Yeah. Okay, cool. Ari.
Yeah. I have to build a
slope.
Right.
To be warm.
Yeah.
Can't say as long as
I'll email it to the Rav.
Why didn't someone else do an experiment?
Or why didn't they just...